From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on March 19th when the CDC announced new guidance concerning safety in schools. As the CDC noted, this change was based on the latest science on physical distancing in classrooms. I will read directly from their guidance now. Quote, CDC now recommends that with universal masking, students should maintain a distance of at least 3 feet in classroom settings. CDC has updated its operational strategy to say, in elementary schools, CDC recommends all students remain at least 3 feet apart in classrooms where mask use is universal, regardless of whether community transmission is low, moderate, substantial, or high. In middle and high schools, CDC also recommends students should be at least 3 feet apart in classrooms where mask use is universal and in communities where transmission is low, moderate, or substantial. Middle school students and high school students should be at least 6 feet apart in communities where transmission is high if cohorting is not possible, end quote. Now, almost immediately, school, government leaders in some states used this information to make plans to bring students back to school full time. Not everywhere, but that's because the new guidance makes it possible to fill classrooms safely instead of mandating more distancing, as schools have done for more than a year. But in New York State, there's been little movement from the top down. And so Brighton School's Superintendent Kevin McGowan wrote an open letter to Governor Cuomo and State Health Commissioner Howard Zucker. I'm going to read part of that letter now. It is worth hearing at length. Quote, I am writing to you today, pleading for action to be taken regarding the current DOH guidelines for schools. We have anxiously awaited a change since the publication of studies in support of a change in distancing requirements, and actions were taken in neighboring states to reduce distancing that would provide a legitimate path toward a reopening of schools. We believe that sufficient evidence exists that it would be safe for students and staff to return using the most recent CDC guidance as parameters for our mitigation efforts. However, we understand and respect the state's statutory role in reviewing guidance from the CDC and determining how it does and does not apply in New York State. We simply are imploring you to fulfill this obligation without delay and provide us with updated rules that are reflective of the best, most recent science in support of mitigation strategies that will continue to keep students and staff safe. Your continued inaction smacks of detachment, complacency, or a lack of understanding regarding the impact of your failure to act. There does not seem to be any reason for your delay, and in the absence of one, we are left to think that movement on this issue simply isn't at all a priority for you. Children need to be in school 5 days per week. It is nearly impossible to measure the significant mental health challenges, learning loss, and at a base level, the loss of opportunities that come with a reduced in-person program. End quote. Superintendent McGowan concludes his letter, quote, time is of the essence. We've invited Superintendent McGowan to join us on Connections to talk about safety in the classrooms, whether he's concerned, for example, about new variants, and when he expects to hear an answer from New York State on this. Kevin McGowan, Superintendent of Brighton Schools, welcome back to the program.
Evan, thanks so much. Appreciate you having me. I hope you're well.
Well, I'm doing well, and I know that schools have been doing their best here. Your letter is as pointed as any I have seen so far from a school leader on this issue. Take me through why you wrote it and why it was so pointed.
Well, thank you. And again, thank you for bringing more attention to this issue. First of all, this is, I don't think it's overselling it or overstating it to say this is a travesty. So where I'm coming from is we've been very cautious throughout. We've been very respectful of the guidelines. We haven't pushed any envelopes. We have been thoughtful about our work and paid very close attention to what people have told us would keep our children, our staff, and everybody's families as safe as possible. So throughout this entire journey, very supportive of the guidance that we've gotten. Over time, evidence has mounted that it would be safe to bring children back to school more fully with less distance, and we can do that. And we're deeply concerned about learning loss, deeply concerned about mental health issues, deeply concerned about opportunities lost. And when the evidence suggests that it's safe to come back, and our state has chosen to not pursue a path towards making that happen, I think they're letting us down. It is not for me to say whether it is safe or not, although I've, you know, indicated that in the past 30 seconds. I am not that kind of doctor, as I'm fond of saying. Though that is up to public health experts, But when the CDC has issued very clear guidance that would make that possible and our state simply hasn't acted, I don't get it. And I think it's a shame. So that's really kind of the path and the story and why the letter was so pointed. We just simply need them to take action. And if the action is that it's not safe enough to return, that variables are different in New York State than they are elsewhere, and that the CDC guidance is not something comfortable for the state, be that as it may, that's up to our state to decide and our state health department to decide, and I would respect that. But taking no action, not communicating with us, not actually even addressing this issue, again, I think it smacks of complacency, detachment, and just that this may not be a high priority, and it ought to be.
Well, for listeners who are thinking, fine, just do it yourself. Don't wait for the state. What do you say to that?
We can't do that. You know, so that's come up often, and you know, people have said, just do it. You don't have to follow those rules. You can make those decisions. In fact, the governor has almost created that narrative by saying, well, it's up to local leaders. It's up to school districts. That's just not true. We operate within a system that provides us with guidance, with rules, with regulations, whether that's on the evaluation of staff or taking Regents exams or 3-8 tests, whatever it may be, we operate within a larger system. We're one ship in the Navy, so to speak. And it would be, I think, irresponsible to disregard the public health guidelines that actually tell us what we're supposed to be doing. It'd be beyond irresponsible, frankly. I think it's illegal, and it's not an option for us. So we're simply saying that we don't know better. We just know we need an answer.
Okay. Now, I want to talk to you about how you see not only what the CDC has said, but how you have seen the efforts that you and your teams have made to make sure students can be safe with this. And I know that this can be emotional, and we will welcome some feedback from listeners as we go throughout the program. If listeners want to call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email the program connections at WXXI.org. Before we even talk about the steps toward safety and how you see what the CDC is saying here, Superintendent McGowan, let me ask you if you have a sense for what parents want. And I know it's not all parents. I mean, certainly not. I mean, I know there will be loud voices on all sides of this. But generally speaking, do you have a sense for what parents want you to do?
Yes, they would like their kids back in school 5 days. So we've recently surveyed. We've done a lot of work to reach out to our community to understand exactly what choices people would make. And the overwhelming majority, I mean, nearly all of our students currently in the hybrid model, which would be our 2 days a week of in-person instruction, have opted to come back for the full 5 days of in-person.
Okay. Among the parents who are concerned about that, how consistent have they been in communicating with you, and have you made any progress with addressing concerns?
Well, we've had some very good conversations with parents, and their concerns are layered, right? So it's not just for them now about health and safety. Some people have a concern that if their child was to leave the remote program that they're currently in and opt to come back for 5 days of in-person instruction, they'd have to leave their remote teacher. So those teachers, we're not at this point collapsing any sections or changing any teachers for people based on kids coming in or out of remote or in-person instruction. So some of the concern from people is about just losing their child's teacher and saying, you know what, I'd rather stay in the remote program for the remainder of the year. Other people have very legitimate, and I say that cautiously because I don't think it's for me to judge at this point legitimate or illegitimate, but very sound reasons why they would like their child to remain in a remote program, you know, immune compromised situations at home that are complicated in a variety of ways. So we haven't ever endeavored to convince anybody to do anything. We've just simply answered questions and provided feedback. We've had very, very few people say, you know what, I just don't think it's safe enough yet. That doesn't seem to be an overriding concern unless they have, again, immune compromised situations and other issues that really for them prohibit any kind of in-person contact until more people are vaccinated and there's some kind of herd immunity. So it's been actually great discussions with families, and they seem to be very confident in our ability to keep transmission rates really low. It just hasn't happened in schools, and we would expect that to continue.
What about teachers in general? You know, in Rochester, just across the city line, there's been an ongoing, I think, conflict is a fair word between that school administration and teachers. I'm not going to ask you to kind of weigh in other districts. I understand the dynamics are different, the situations are different. But I do want to ask you about in your own district, if you feel like you're aligned with teachers, if teachers are on board generally, and if the communication's been solid or if you've had issues.
I wouldn't say we've had issues. I think it's very fair to characterize the conversations as open, as productive, as emotional. You know, people have really legitimate concerns about the potential of becoming ill themselves or bringing that home to their families. Our our collective bargaining, our union, you know, is entirely supportive formally and has been collaborative from day one in this entire process. So there's a narrative out there, and I'll get messages from people that, you know, on the other side of this, you need to reopen immediately. The union shouldn't stand in the way. They haven't stood in the way once. In fact, they've been nothing but helpful, cooperative, and a team in this district. I will tell you, when we've had very open discussions about how do you feel about reopening, what are your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your concerns, there is a lot of concern, but there's not a lot of concern that would at all diminish our ability to do it or slow us down in any way, shape, or form. There are very legitimate questions being asked, very legitimate thoughts being shared and concerns. However, that really has no impact on whether or not we can do it. Nobody has stood in the way. It's been a productive conversation, and rightfully so. People are concerned about their health and safety, but I believe we've been able to work through each of those issues also.
Okay, and before I take a few phone calls, the CDC now says 3 feet most of the time with masking, with universal masking, is, according to the latest science, safe. Does that track with your own experience, and how do you take that information?
It absolutely tracks with our experience. So I think that, you know, we have created an environment where the capacity in our rooms and in our buildings allows for 6 feet of social distancing. Some of the reason why we could bring back only half of our kids and other districts could bring back more, particularly at the elementary level, was just size of building, size of space, and the number of people to supervise those kids in different spaces. I can tell you, though, that in terms of that 6 feet of distance, people are not walking around with 2 yardsticks to measure in between themselves all of the time, right? So there's a lot of incidental movement between people within 3 feet, no different than if you're walking down the aisle at Wegmans, if you're standing in line in different places. We generally have accepted, I think, as a community and as a society, that 6 feet of social distancing, but we're going to interact with each other at closer distances. As a matter of fact, I've talked to a lot of physicians who have said to me, you know, from our community, who have said, I have interaction with patients all day long within 3 feet. Masking is the key, masking is the key, masking is the key. So we have not found really any transmission in school, even though kids, yes, were programmed for 6 feet, but I believe they interact with each other incidentally all the time at a shorter distance, and that hasn't been an issue. It definitely tracks with our experience.
Well, here's one listener saying, maybe it's just me, but when the CDC is giving tearful press conferences about how worried they are, maybe we should pump the brakes. What do you think? I mean, you know, Kevin, I know that's referring to the director of the CDC, who said recently she is very worried about variants and about what they portend in various communities here and around the world. Does that hit you at all?
I think that's a fair point, but I would actually counter this by saying, I wonder what would have happened if we had all come back to school in September 100% with 3 feet of distance instead of 6. And the reason why I phrase it that way, Evan, is it appears to me as though school transmission and the transmission among young people is exceptionally low. And the study, the most recent study that's been quoted, and then I mentioned in my letter to the governor and health commissioner in Massachusetts, they controlled for community transmission rate and still found that 3 feet of distance was a negligible difference than those schools that were providing 6 feet of distance. And that was with a significant number. We're talking about 251 eligible districts, over 500,000 students. I think it's a fair point, but I would say the tearful press conference and the pumping the brakes should be a consideration outside of the school environment, right? Because we know transmission in the school environment has stayed very, very low. Even with an uptick in variants, it has stayed very, very low. So I get it, and I would actually encourage us to think about this the way that they have thought about it in Europe and other places where schools have been a priority. I think there's such a need to get kids back. We can do it safely.
Talking to Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of Brighton Schools, who published an open letter to Governor Cuomo and Health Commissioner Zucker asking New York State to essentially do something regarding the new CDC guidance calling for 3 feet physical distancing instead of 6 feet, which would allow essentially green light schools coming back in person full time, 5 days a week. because of the safety standards and the updated science. New York State, from the top down, hasn't really responded to this and offered its own new guidance, and the superintendent says that needs to happen. Let me go ahead and get our first phone call, and this is Kim in Rochester. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi there. I just wanted to thank you both so much for this conversation. I'm a teacher in a suburban district outside Rochester, and the teachers and the teachers' unions are really hoping and I think feeling a lot more confident that we can do it this safely with the 3 feet and the masking. My question to the Brighton superintendent is he receiving a lot of feedback from parents? And I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this, but I'm just going to say very angry and different social media groups and different behavior at board meetings that maybe I've never seen throughout my teaching career. I'm just wondering if
how do you mean, Kim?
Well, I mean, parents coming and being so angry that we're not open 5 days a week and blaming the school districts, the administrators, the teachers' unions, you know, I mean, just things I've never seen. I've only seen on the news, but I actually saw in real life at one of our Board of Education meetings, you know, parents yelling at the superintendent, talking over him. I mean, I understand that this is such a hard time for parents, too, but I am concerned about the level of anger that I'm seeing with people during this time when I think, you know, we're all kind of working towards the same goal, but I think maybe the feeling is, you know, we don't want to open or something like that. So I'm just wondering if that's happening in other districts or if it's just my particular district that there's a lot of angry people.
Kim, thank you for the phone call, and I'll let the superintendent respond. Go ahead, Superintendent McGowan.
Okay, thanks.
Well, and thanks, Kim. I appreciate the question, too. I think the temperature is definitely higher than it's been before. I would say we have not had that same experience at Board of Education meetings. At virtual town halls that we've done to, you know, discuss where we were with reopening. We've had some very thoughtful conversations. We definitely, though, have had different interaction and different feedback from some people than we have in the past. I think it's undeniable that the temperature is different than it's been before, but not to some of the extremes that I think you've seen or experienced. I will say that a lot of that, though, I don't think it's great, and I think it's something we really need to think about long-term in terms of our relationship as institutions. The distrust of institutions, governmental agencies right now, caused by, I think, a lot of things politically over the last several years, is a concern for me as a school leader, but as a citizen, I think that's something we need to be thoughtful about. It doesn't help, though, taking that temperature down when the governor won't take action, won't communicate, and frankly, continues to have press conferences, not just in terms of the education sector, but all throughout. He blames localities in so many different ways that it just does create a citizenry that hears that, gets very frustrated, and thinks that local leaders aren't doing their part, when in fact, the pathway that he has given to make those local decisions is an impossible pathway to traverse. So I think that's part of the problem, the rhetoric that's been created, they can do it if they want to do it. That's not actually the case. And I think that just leads to more frustration. And I understand where people are coming from. They are desperate for their kids to come back to school. Yes, I'm concerned about the tone, but I also understand the passion and why people are at where they are.
Superintendent, let me read a comment from a listener named Nick, who says, am I the only one who thinks forcing full-time in-person with 2 months left in the academic year isn't worth the impact it will have on logistics and our kids? I'm asking genuinely. The school year is almost over. What do you think?
Well, it's not, though. So it's a full quarter. We're 25% away from the end of the year. So if we can do this now, I would say that a quarter of the year is absolutely worth it. There is probably a breaking point where that doesn't make as much sense. But I think if you asked any seniors in high school who would like the opportunity to have their last days in school, or if you think about kindergartners making a big transition to first grade, or any of the kids who are kind of on the elbow going to the next building, any amount of time in school is probably worthwhile. And again, for so many kids, particularly those in higher risk populations, any time spent in school we know is beneficial. What the logistical point is, where there's a cost benefit that it just doesn't make sense, I'm not sure. But I think right now we're still a quarter of the way. We've got plenty of the school year left. And this is a good proving ground going into September for what it could look like, what it should look like, what will work, what won't work. I think that's a worthwhile consideration as well.
Now, I want to talk to you about the learning loss and the difference between in-person and remote, or in-person and hybrid. You have always been pretty sanguine about the way schools have been handling this pandemic and doing their best to make sure that if you got to do it hybrid, you're going to do it at a high level. If you're going to have some full remote, you're going to do it at a high level, and you're going to try to replicate the experience as best you can. Well, you write in your letter, I'll read it again for people who missed the introduction of this program. In your letter to Governor Cuomo and Commissioner Zucker, you wrote, quote, children need to be in school 5 days per week. It is nearly impossible to measure the significant mental health challenges, learning loss, and at a base level, the loss of opportunities that come with a reduced in-person program, end quote. Can I take that to mean that it's not that you think schools haven't done a good job, it's that there is a ceiling on the way things are done now, and that ceiling does not come close to what students can experience in a typical school setting?
Yes, that's a great way to describe it. I think people have done an incredible job to lift brick-and-mortar experiences to a virtual space to keep kids safe, to redesign what we do, to think about different ways to connect with kids virtually, and I don't want to take anything away from that. However, I don't think there is any full replacement for the in-person experience. And again, in terms of disproportionality, we know that this experience has affected kids in many disproportionate situations at a much higher rate, higher level, and we need to be aware of that. I don't think it's possible to measure the impact. I think it's significant. I think most educators would agree with that it just, you can't replicate the in-person experiences. As well as people have done, and as much as they continue to innovate and try and do that, it doesn't replace being in person.
Tell me about the mental health concerns. This is an issue I've seen raised in a number of places, in a number of publications, and I don't know how long it will take to really fully get our heads around a mental health impact, but what are you seeing or what are you concerned about?
Kids and people are fragile. They are experiencing the greatest trauma, perhaps, of their life. They need contact with other human beings. They need just the little check-in, you know, the opportunity for the teacher first thing in the morning to say, hey, how are you today? That question brings about a variety of responses, and I think it might be sometimes hard for people who are not in the classroom or in schools to appreciate those little, you know, interactions, those experiences throughout the day, those check-ins are beyond just like the counseling sessions, right? The mental health of kids and staff, families, is tended to constantly by interaction with educators each and every day. And not having that regular contact each day really has a big impact on kids and families.
Talking to Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of Brighton Schools, as I look at the last week, the numbers of COVID infections in Monroe County, I think we had hoped a month ago that this curve was going straight down, and instead it plateaued, not near the highest levels, but certainly higher than we'd like. Some of that is likely due to the arrival of certain variants that are just more transmissible. But, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. We don't fully know. Some of it could be because, there's a feeling that spring is coming. People are out more. Maybe they're letting their guard down. I don't know. But let me take a look here at just the numbers the last week or so. Looks like 20 to 25% of the new cases every day are people, male and female, under the age of 19. So that's much higher than it was earlier. And number one, that means when you see close to zero people in their 70s, 80s, that means the vaccines are working. And that is tremendously reassuring for all of us. But we still see quite a lot in terms of the infections every day of people under the age of 10, people under the age of 20. Now, there's two points I want to ask you about that. First is that you are indicating that you think those infections are not happening in school settings, generally speaking. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And that is based on CDC, based on your own experience, based on the data that we have?
Just on our own experience. I'm not sure. I would guess that the data would support that. But on our own experience, because every case is contact traced. We're aware of every single case, lengthy discussions about every case, and that hasn't been our experience at school. It is outside of school transmission to the best we can tell.
About 6 weeks ago, Apoorva Mandavilli, who is the New York Times science reporter, was on the Daily Podcast with Michael Barbaro, and she offered some sense of what we know from the numbers about how often kids can have COVID and transmit it. Now, this is, again, the subject of much debate, research, moving numbers. But according to Mandavilli, the latest numbers indicate that kids under the age of 10 spread COVID at half or less the rate that adults do. And then kids between 10 years old and adulthood, it's a sliding scale upwards. And eventually, by the time they're mid-late teenagers, if they've got COVID, they can transmit it just like any full-grown adult. We don't know why. It is a very curious thing. But it doesn't mean that kids can't. It means that they transmit it less. So I just want to kind of keep that in mind here. And that's something that we're still trying to understand. Having said all of that, Superintendent McGowan, are you concerned about kids getting sick? I don't want to ask you if you're concerned about kids getting sick. Everybody is. I mean, none of this is an ideal situation. But are you comforted by the fact that when kids get COVID, they tend not to have symptoms or have very, very mild symptoms? Are you concerned that on rare occasions kids get very sick? Are you worried about, you know, I guess I want to get your mindset on how you see infection in kids. Because I know that in some parts of the discourse, I hear it in my email, people will accuse me of not caring if kids get sick, of not caring if people get sick. How do you kind of address kids getting sick in COVID?
Well, at this risk of sounding indignant, I have said to people who have said that to me that in some ways I, especially when it's said very personally, resent the implication that I don't care. Because two of my three kids are in this district, my own children, and one I sent off to college, you know, in the midst of this as well, and they've been able to stay safe. And I love all of our kids here. There's 3,600 kids in this district. I happen to love my two more, like any parent would, and I would never put them in a situation where I feel as though they would be at a risk of you know, serious illness. And I recognize that walking out our door, there's a risk. You know, I have this conversation with people about snow days during a normal year. You know, I wouldn't put my own kids on the bus or have them walk to school and in particular weather, and I won't do that to your kids either, and vice versa. If I feel comfortable that way, I try and put myself in the shoes of a parent, right? And every parent puts their child first and their safety first. I'd make the argument actually and flip that a little bit and say to people, if we know that kids are not transmitting this at school and that some kids are getting sick, by the way, with very little negative result of that, right? We also know that through our experience, there are kids that have gotten terribly sick, and for that, we shouldn't take it lightly. But we also know that for the most part, our kids, and again, our experience in this district, it's a very mild illness. And so if we know all that to be the case, and they're not transmitting it at school, where are they transmitting it? Outside of school. Should we then not want them in school more? Because the places that they're getting it are outside of school. So our most recent several weeks of data, I can tell you we've had one case, and then we've had two cases, and then one case. You know, we report them every week in an update to our community. And I know the update tomorrow will have a few more cases. As a result of a transmission outside of school in an athletic environment, a non-school athletic environment, and that's not to place any blame on anybody for doing anything wrong. I don't know all the circumstances. I can just tell you the facts are, those kids did not get sick in school. So where we have a very controlled environment, different from when kids are outside of school, I'd suggest getting them back into school is the best idea. I'd also look at the data for the past couple of weeks, and that number you mentioned is concerning. I think the average case count per 100,000 residents is around 159 today, and that has gone up. Well, what happened a couple of weeks ago? The weather started to break. Kids are out. They're socializing more. People are out. They're socializing more. They're doing more things outside with each other. When they're in school, it's a much more controlled environment. When they're out of school half the week, they have that many more opportunities to interact in ways that may not be as safe. A lot of kids are doing a great job with masking, but that is a possibility also I think people should keep in mind.
Okay. And is there anything in infection monitoring, COVID variants, et cetera, that would convince you, okay, this whole scenario has changed enough that, you know, we got the green light from New York State and the CDC guidance, and we were back full time. But now I've seen enough to say we've got to pull back. Is there something in your mind or is some sort of a benchmark that you would use for that?
I don't think there's a particular number, but the two things that I would be looking at would be, one, transmission in schools. So if it appeared as though what we were doing was not working well, that the distancing was having an impact and we were seeing significant transmission in school, or transmission when kids would have their mask off to eat and drink 6 feet away from each other. But if that started to be an issue, I think, you know, it would have us revisit things. And then I think overall it would be the notion that if a significant number of people in the community become infected, and this would go for staff also, who, by the way, are largely vaccinated at this point, and we couldn't operate effectively based on the number of adults available or adults who are home looking after their own quarantined families, or a significant number of kids were quarantined and couldn't be in school and it just became an ineffective educational environment, we'd have to revisit what we were doing.
Talking to Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of Brighton Schools, who says that students do need to be in school 5 days a week, and he believes that the CDC guidelines that were published earlier this month indicate that there is a safe way to continue not only the work of having students in school, but to bring them back in greater numbers. And he's waiting for New York State to green light that and is calling on the governor and has been very pointed in his language, calling it a travesty that New York State has not acted on this. Let's take this only break of the hour. If you want to join the program, we've got more of your emails and comments to read for the superintendent coming up here as we understand his position on schools reopening. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Again, you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Coming up in our second hour, you've probably heard the term climate justice, but what does it mean? Well, for 3 weeks, a 21-day, it's sort of an equity challenge, the kind that we've seen in discussions about race, but this time around, an awareness and action for climate justice. We'll define the term, we'll talk about who's impacted, and what we all can learn from it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A listener asks on Twitter, what consideration are schools giving to the notion that maybe students aren't getting sick at school because of 6 feet of social distancing? Superintendent McGowan?
Yeah, they aren't. You know, so studies show that that's just not happening. And if we had 3 feet, we could bring kids back. We'll continue to do all the things that we have been doing, the mitigation efforts in terms of respiratory and hand hygiene and keeping buildings very clean, which they always were and will still be, thinking about the air quality, the contact tracing, the isolation, everything that's happening in terms of quarantining. Those are all the other mitigation strategies that are making a big difference. Simply put, the distance is an issue. It doesn't seem to be a health risk to do this. I think we should be pursuing this quickly.
I don't want to ask you to speak for your colleagues in other districts. I just want to ask you if generally you've gotten a feeling from them on where they are on this.
I think they're very much in the same place. You know, in addition to the letter that I sent, other Monroe County superintendents have sent a letter. We sent a letter as a group as well, requesting the same, thing that I did, which is to move on this and to make some kind of judgment. But people are in the same place. They really, really want their kids back 5 days because we believe it can happen safely.
Let me go ahead and get Mike in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Mike.
One second.
I got Mike when he was rolling down the stairs. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, could you take a second and speak to some of the lessons learned during COVID, some of the changes? Because I hope we don't go back to the traditional model, considering now with the influx of technology and all the hard lessons learned from the hybrid model. Could you speak to the future?
Sure. I mean, I do think that although I've, you know, been pretty vociferous in saying that you can't replace in person, clearly we know there are kids that we can connect with in some different ways leveraging technology. So I do think that that's certainly something we ought to think about. I think that there's different flexibility that we can provide people in terms of workplace flexibility that, you know, corporate America has known for a long time. which can help with effectiveness and availability. I think just being able to reach out to families in different ways using technology, making things more convenient for people. I imagine parent conferences in the future might look different too. How much more convenient would it be for a family to connect with their child's teacher via Zoom as opposed to having to be in person? So I think in those ways, again, lessons that were learned, I think, in other sectors long before, we'll be able to leverage that going forward and have some kind of combination of opportunities for kids maybe to tap into different classes in different places that they might not be able to in their home district. I think there's a lot of opportunities we ought to be looking at.
Kevin, were we too optimistic about doing learning remotely, though, thinking, you know what, we're going to make this work and we're going to do everything that we wanted to do?
No, I don't think most educators were too optimistic about it, actually. I think that they were just realistic and from the beginning saying, listen, we're going to do the best we can and we're going to provide a high-quality experience, but there will be a limit to what that looks like, and it just can't compare to in-person. So I don't know that it was too optimistic. I think it was just realistic based on what was needed in terms of safety. So we didn't make the choice because we thought, great, this is something we can do just as well and keep people safe. We did it because we had to do it to keep people safe. Now let's maximize that opportunity.
You've been critical of the governor and Commissioner Zucker for not responding to the March 19th CDC updated guidelines for physical distancing in schools. What if the state leaders said, look, Superintendent, in the last 2 weeks, we've seen not only what you could call a plateau, but even a potentially, God forbid, a rise in cases locally, many of them concentrated on the younger. And because of those numbers, we haven't given you a green light based on what the CDC did on March 19th. We need to wait a little bit here. What if that were what you heard from the state? Where would that leave you?
Well, I'd probably first react and say that's not very honest or transparent, because the reality is, going back all the way to March 8th, Dr. Zucker said, and I quote, this is a high priority, revising the guidance. And then on March 22nd, after the CDC guidance was issued, he said it would be reviewed expeditiously. My definition of expeditious and high priority seems to be very different. And at that time, the numbers were very low. There would have been no reason to delay. So the reason for their delay seems to be, again, some other type of complacency as opposed to a concern over numbers now. However, if numbers now were to lead them to say that, I'd say, first of all, as public health experts, that's your choice. And you certainly should make that decision, and we would abide by that. Again, not pretending to be a real doctor, I wouldn't be trying to overrule that. I do think there's significant data to suggest that that's not a good way to go. But I want to go back to this one other key issue. Show me then where that transmission is happening at school. So if we see numbers rising and rising in children, and it's outside of school, then doesn't logic suggest having them in school occupied in a different way and not perhaps outside or outside unmasked or playing with friends, et cetera, that maybe bringing them back to school would actually be the safer alternative? Because, again, schools have done a remarkable job in keeping the transmission rate low. Maybe the safest place for kids is to actually be in school, with a lot of data to support the 3 feet versus 6 feet.
Okay, but to make sure I understand you, I think the main frustration I'm hearing from you is you're getting nothing from them. You're not getting a yes or a no, you're getting zilch.
You're absolutely correct. Yep.
Okay. So you might not love the decision if they said no on this, but at least it would be a decision. Yeah. Okay. I take that point here. And to the question of you know, whether kids might be even safer in schools given the lack of transmission, Jen writes to say, how many teachers and how many students at Brighton have had COVID?
I don't have the total number in front. I don't even have a percentage. I can just say, if you care to go back and take a look at our website, the dashboard is there, bcsd.org, under the COVID tab, and that's a New York State dashboard. We report those numbers every single day. I don't know the total number, but we're now at a weekly new case rate of, you know, around one and then two. We're talking single digits, and then single digits within each building, even when they've been gone up over time.
Okay, so one or two cases in a week, and that's based on continued random sets of how many people being rapid tested?
So we're not rapid testing at this point. That's really not happening.
Okay, I apologize.
Right. That's just what's been reported to us, and that's through the health department and contact tracing and then our work with parents to determine that.
Should you still be rapid testing?
if that is a way that we can have more kids in school, if that is one of the strategies that the state devises, then that makes perfect sense to me. I think that there wasn't a need to continue doing that. And again, with such a low number of cases, it didn't seem like something that made a lot of sense. But if that's a way to, through that community surveillance type of philosophy, to keep kids in school, I don't think it's a bad idea at all. We can absolutely manage that. The systems are all set up. We're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, as a parent of a 9-year-old who has been rapid tested a bunch, he's got no issue with it. I have no issue. In fact, I am grateful for what Monroe County has been able to offer with rapid testing. It's not a get out of, you know, restrictions free card, but it is helpful. It's a helpful data point, especially with current infection and infectiousness. So I guess I don't understand, given the variants and given what we've seen in terms of transmissibility, I don't understand if the resources are there not doing it. But are the resources there? I mean, could the resources be there, Kevin?
Oh, no question about it. The county has been nothing but supportive and helpful. By the way, in this entire picture, Dr. Mendoza, Adam Bello, very, very supportive and helpful, and they have the resources in terms of tests to make that happen from what we understand. And then the state has committed additional resources. In the most recent COVID relief package, there are resources as well. I don't think resources is an obstacle to that happening.
Okay. And before I get back to feedback from listeners, just explain to listeners who hear you say, we don't see infection spread, we don't see outbreak happening in schools. In other words, when people get COVID, even when kids are getting COVID, they're getting it somewhere else. If you're not testing anymore, how do you know that?
Oh, that's a great question. That's really because when the contact tracing occurs and they walk through with us where they believe somebody has been infected, and that's obviously not 100% accurate either, but where they believe, it's usually related to some type of gathering outside of school, whether that's an athletic competition or a home, a house party, some other type of event where there was somebody else who was COVID positive involved, and they can trace it back that way, but it hasn't been at school.
Let me get back to phones. Jane in Rochester. Jane, do you have a vaccine yet?
Yes, and I get my second one next week.
I'm glad to hear that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I noticed that in the past when we get one good number, we are so euphoric over it, we just want to surrender all of our precautions or some of them, and it hasn't worked so far. We jump too fast. So I would rather see us just continue on, finish up the year, not put the children through all the adjustment they'll have to do with going to school 5 days a week, and start afresh in the fall. And it is an adjustment for children. They don't know what to expect, and they get the news late, and they've got to just make another adjustment again. But I think it would be a good thing to occasionally err on the side of caution. There's no death, at least. Thank you very, very much.
Jane, thank you. Go ahead, Superintendent.
I think we've erred on the side of caution for a year. I think even if kids were to come back, we'd still be erring on the side of caution. Remember, when we talk about coming back fully in person, we're still talking about distancing. We're still talking about universal masking. We're still talking about all the other mitigation efforts. So I don't want to give the impression that this is just free-for-all return to what it looked like, say, February of last year. All of those other mitigation efforts are still in place. That wouldn't change. And I think that it is something we can do. Again, the studies bear that out. I also think kids are awfully resilient. They've certainly shown us that over the past year, if we didn't know that already. And if you were to tell most kids you're coming back 5 days next week, I just don't think that is a significant adjustment for children as it is for adults. And I think they can handle that. I respect where the caller's coming from. And I would also say that if it is determined that it is not healthy enough for that to happen, then by all means, we'll stay in the same model. We'll do the safest, take the safest path that our state would like us to take, and that would be fine, and we can manage that through the remainder of the year, make that work. But it does seem with 25% left that there's just a moment right now to capture where there's an opportunity for kids.
So what do you do next year, given the fact that you haven't heard? I mean, what is the game? I guess you continue as normal until you do hear something, or are you making plans and ready to be back? In other words, I guess if you got the green light, how fast could you be back, and what is the expectation and plan here?
I mean, we're ready to go. So on April 12th, our plan is to reopen K through 5, and on April 19th, 6 through 12, if the state flips the switch and adopt something resembling the CDC guidance, unless there's some big departure from the CDC guidance that we then can't manage. For example, if they took the CDC guidance in many other ways but not distancing, that would be an issue for us. But the only significant difference really right now is the distancing issue. If that happens, we are ready to go. We have all the right surveys in place and decisions in place by families and a process for that our families here in the district are all set with. They know the timeline. They know we are ready to go. And then if it comes after that, we will be ready to go at a moment's notice. We would likely give people a week's notice. There's a lot of change for families. But we will be ready whenever that happens.
Heather writes to say, I may have missed this in your discussion with Dr. McGowan, but please make distinctions between younger and older kids. It's my understanding that as long as our county rate stays above 99 cases, older kids won't be going back full time because they can't cohort. Is that correct?
That is spot on. That's a great distinction. So K through 5 kids, according to the guidance, could come back because they are now K through 5 for us, K through 6 for some other people. They are cohorted or grouped, right? So a standalone 5th grade classroom is a cohort. That's a group. The infection rate in the region doesn't make a difference for that group of kids, according to the CDC guidance. They could come back because they're grouped. 6 through 12 kids who switch classes, they're in all different classes with different kids, so they're not cohorted, they're not grouped, could not come back because of that fact alone until the rate drops below 100, and that's the cases per 100,000 residents per day.
Okay. So in our last few minutes here, I'd like to ask if you feel like we've learned enough in the last year. I want to ask you what we have learned in the last year. If you go back 12 months ago today, heading into April, not knowing how long we were going to be doing this, what have you learned in the last year?
Well, we've learned, one, the importance of the connection to school, and perhaps I just say relearned it, right? So I think that those of us in this work have thought about that for a long time, and we're in this work because of that. But we've certainly seen that value, that deep connection that kids and families need to have with their school district. We've learned about the vital service that we provide to families, the way the economy also depends on our full operation. We've learned about how to teach differently, how to connect differently, how to follow up with families differently, how to have families in with us differently, even when they can't be physically in with us. And we've learned about how to keep people safe and healthy and to track disease differently and to then move at a moment's notice to do things differently, be more flexible and agile as organizations. We've learned how to deploy resources differently, how to have people doing different things in different ways and really adjust our organizations to meet people's needs differently. And ultimately, we've learned how to keep people safe with universal masking and with the other mitigation strategies at a shorter distance. We just need to be able to do that.
There is a perception in Monroe County of about certain districts. Reputationally, Brighton is viewed as not only an outstanding school district, but a generally a wealthier one. I know there is some socioeconomic diversity in your district. And as we try to understand who is most harmed by full remote or hybrid or not learning in person, is it, generally speaking, your view, do you agree with some of the critics who have said the kids who are hurt worst are the kids who are, you know, from backgrounds that are struggling the most with poverty, with socioeconomics?
There's no question. Every single challenge we face in life and in schools and for kids is impacted by what you just said. When your circumstances are not as stable, when your economics are not as stable, when your structures aren't as stable, and when you are struggling to manage different aspects of your life, this challenge becomes even more overwhelming. And I should point out that so many families in all different circumstances with all different levels of income have worked awfully hard to make this work and done just an incredible job of managing such a trying circumstance. But there is no question that those other pressures are only exacerbated in this particular moment.
Okay. And about our last minute, I know you're dealing with this school year. And looking ahead feels like probably forever from now, especially when you want to try to get in as much as you can before the end of this calendar school year. But if you look ahead to next fall, we don't know how many kids will be vaccinated. We don't know what the trials are going to tell us. We don't know how fast that could get rolled out. Could be faster than we think, and we could still be waiting in the fall. We could be waiting into next year for kids of certain ages to get vaccinated. Is it your expectation that at least by the fall we'll see full-time school? Or do you think that's sort of circumstantial? And I mean, how do you think ahead that way?
You know, it's so hard to make predictions on this, and I've gotten almost every one of them wrong. So I should point out to listeners, don't take this one to the bank. I can't see how, if we're having this conversation in April, by September, we aren't much further along the road of 5 days in person. I just think the evidence will continue to mount that if we're not taking action right now, which I'm so hopeful we will, that will happen for the fall. But I think it will be circumstantial. I think that one thing that the community needs to continue to do and people need to think about is drive that rate down. Keep your mask on. Keep your distance. Do the things that we did before to drive the rate down. It's incumbent upon all of us to take responsibility for that and help to drive the rate down so we can have kids in school.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that sentiment. I will also say, though, that this has been a pandemic in which those with resources have had a whole lot easier time doing that. And I'm not blaming school superintendents. I'm looking all the way to the top of government. We haven't really prioritized people without resources. This has been much more convenient for people who've got the resources.
There's no question about that.
Yeah, it's tough. I always appreciate the conversation and the transparency, Superintendent McGowan. Please keep us apprised of this, and thank you for making time, as always, for the program.
I absolutely will. Thanks so much for having me.
The superintendent of Brighton Schools is Dr. Kevin McGowan. He's been our guest for the hour, and we've got more connections coming up.